Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us. We come your way every Sunday at 7 a.m. and p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We're streaming live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com, and we archive our programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. We really do appreciate your tuning in, and might very well in a couple of months have some very exciting news for you. I'm hoping. And it is all related to our Mythosophia series that we ran last year from, January through December. 12-part series on delving into the depths of myth and wisdom. I'll keep you posted on that interesting information. Post right now information for you about our program today. It's called The Next Evolution. Sound familiar? My guest in studio today, Jack Reed. He is the founder, the visionary, the global visionary of CommunityPlanet.org, as well as the concepts therein. And Jack, it is great to have you back on the program. Thanks for joining us.
All right. Great to be here.
Here we are in 2015, and we're in the month of February, and time just keeps flying on by. And I know that we had talked at length, not only on this program, but even attending a couple of the meetings back in, 2008, 2009, 2010, yeah. I forget what year it was, in terms of developing community. And I know that a lot of people have a lot of difficulty with the concept because their mind goes back to the 60s and communes and free love and all of these different things. And this is a concept that has grown way beyond that. We're talking about, as we talk about on this program, finding those new ways of living and working and playing together in small communities that can interact with each other, but they maintain their village atmosphere, so to speak. And you have a particular concept I find very interesting that I'd like for you to talk about on this program as well, in terms of coming to consensus. And I think that's a very interesting idea. For those who are just hearing of you for the first time, tell us about Community Planet and what this concept is, how you came, give us the background, if you will, on Jack Reed and why this is important to him.
You can take me back to my background. It really happened when I was about 15 years old, and I was reading a book, and that was around 1961, and we were still not that many years after a tail gunner, Joe McCarthy, and the whole nuclear war threat and the Cold War and just before the missile crisis with the confrontation with the Soviet Union in Cuba. So there was a lot of international intrigue going on for someone who was like 15 years old and trying to take this all in and make sense of it and somebody who in their heart really cared about the planet and what to do with the planet. And I read a book about an ancient lost civilization and how they lived in community in the civilization. And I thought when I read that, I thought, if this could be demonstrated, how people could live together in a completely different way, that's the one thing that could change everything else on the planet. And that happened when I was 15, and I've kept that vision ever since then. And meanwhile, as you said, there were the communes for the 60s. Well, that wasn't going to appeal to anybody because that was kind of a back-to-nature poverty trip kind of thing done by young people. And that wasn't the vision at all. The vision was to make this on a scale that would be so enticing to just about everybody that everybody would want to be there. And since that time, the intentional community movement has really blossomed and is, there's a website called Foundation for Intentional Communities. I think people could access it by going to something like, I think it's ic.org. And there are all kinds of intentional communities out there that are doing many, many different kinds of things, but all in a way that the people want to live together in a way that really enhances their lives. What's different about what Community Planet is doing is that our intention is nothing less than to transform the entire planet. So we're thinking of community on the scale of creating initially a 500-person community and then a cluster of these, say like 3,000 people in one place demonstrating something completely different, to where when people look at this, they see that people are happier, healthier, more abundant, having more free time, more in touch with nature, more in touch with themselves and each other, with all kinds of opportunities for creative endeavors and play and just having more fun in their lives. So the and then making that open for people to come and see it and getting that out on the internet with the media that's available, the media coverage that's available now, and so that people can see what can be done. And again, this is different from any other intentional community endeavor that I know of, except for we've got some partners in the director is in Hermosa Beach in Los Angeles, and that is called One Community. And I think their website is onecommunityglobal.org, and they share exactly the same vision. As a matter of fact, their director has said that he and I share the same brain, because he came across upon this idea just thinking, as many people have thought, which is, what is the one thing that could happen to transform the planet? And a lot of times when people go to the website, our website, communityplanet.org, or read my book, they think, geez, that's exactly what I was thinking, because anybody who holds that consciousness of the highest good for all can see that, yeah, this is the one thing that could change everything else, because everything is interconnected. So we just simply need to create a brand new model. And as Bucky Fuller said, and quoted by many different people in different ways, but the quote on the back cover of my book is, in order to change something, don't struggle to change the existing model. Create a new one and make the old one obsolete. I have a saying that trying to against something or try to tweak the existing system is just putting Band-Aids on a broken system. The political and economic systems are broken beyond repair. So, you know, we just need to create something brand new and go from there and have that replicated.
And isn't that what they do in business anyway, when you're talking about whether it's computers, software, cell phones? What they do is they come out with a new version to make the old version obsolete, so you have to buy the new version. And here you're talking about basically the same thing, coming up with a totally new concept, if you will, that, as you say, makes the old one obsolete.
Yeah, that's a pretty good analogy.
Yeah. And the only difference is that you're not marketing it in the same concept, in the same way, in terms of trying to and this is just an observation, you're not trying to redistribute the wealth. And yet businesses in this country in particular, that's really, as in spite of the fact that people say, oh, that's just free enterprise and what have you, well, but you're trying to take my money and put it into your pocket. But that's not what you're trying to do here.
Well, money is an interesting concept in itself, in that we think that it takes money to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And money is just electronic scorekeeping, and it's pieces of paper and metal. And that in itself cannot do anything. What we're talking about is cooperation.
Mm-hmm.
Cooperation does things. There's an example in Kauai where a bridge was out to, I think it's called the Waimea Canyon, which is the Grand Canyon of the Pacific. So the locals were losing a lot of tourist money because the people couldn't get up into that canyon for the tourists. So the government was going to take quite a while to do this, and the locals just, and it would have taken over a year. So the locals just got together and they did it themselves in like a month or so, using their own resources, their own manpower. And we have a quote in the book, which is, we need to redefine wealth as use and access rather than as possession. People don't need to own so much. And money, as I said, there's a graph on page 252 in the book, which shows that the incredible inequality of inefficiency of what I call the every person for themselves system, where everybody needs to try and survive on their own. And in this system, and this is a system that's gone on unquestioned for thousands of years, it's just incredibly inefficient, but it's like we're all in some kind of mass hallucination where we can't imagine anything else. So it's all about, you know, in Congress, the State of the Union was last night. It's like, where's the money going to come from? Mm-hmm. Well, the money is just an artificial creation. I mean, it's like mind-boggling that people can't break out of that hallucination to recognize what's going on.
Well, that's what I even raised this point too. Who said that this was the only way that it was that it had to be? I mean, just because it's been this way for several thousand years doesn't mean it's the only way. And from my observations, as brief as they may be, as far as my existence here, the free enterprise capitalist system is not a sustainable model.
No,
because eventually, even if you could have the ideal system where there was no greed, the way that my mind is perceiving it, when I get out of high school, I finish my education out of college and I go get a job, every job that I move on to, I'm hoping that my income rises, my income goes up. And if I stay someplace for many, many years, I'm hoping my income goes up. But how is that going to be sustained by the company I'm working for unless they raise their prices of their product or service? And if they raise the prices of their product and service to the general public, then the general public has to come up with more money, which means their jobs, they've got to get more money somehow. And the cycle continues. But we don't see that happening. Salaries aren't going up. Wages aren't going up, matching pricing and those types of things. Because if they were, people being upset about a gallon of gas being at $5, gas should actually be at $50 or $75 or more a gallon if you've factored in that whole model of increased wages means increased prices means increased wages means increased prices. And it just spirals out of control.
Yeah. Going back to the every person for themselves system, mm-hmm. It's like 15% of the jobs that exist are necessary. The other 85% of the jobs only exist because of the lack of cooperation between people.
Yes.
So that means that all those resources, the energy, you know, to talk about energy in terms of how much natural resources are out there, it's like, let's not address it from that standpoint. Let's just address it from the standpoint of how much energy is really necessary. And if we adopted a system that was based on cooperation for the highest good of all concerned, that would immediately take care, not immediately, because it'd take a while to transition into creating sure. these model communities, but it would take care of all the energy issues.
So where are you in the development of these communities? Obviously, initially you want to have one of 500, but eventually you're going to have a total of six with a total of 3,000 people, if my math is correct.
Yes.
That would be within close proximity, not right on top of each other, but in close proximity. And they would be working within their communities to thrive and do the things that they wanted to do, and then maybe, I don't know if you'd call it trade of some sort between the communities, cooperation to accomplish certain goals, like maybe, for example, building a bridge from one side of a chasm to the other, like you talked about in Hawaii. Where are you right now in this?
Well, we're still looking to find that one resource that could assist this whole thing in happening. And in cooperation with one community is is way ahead of where we are in terms of their planning. They have got a website where literally a person could go in there and spend weeks at looking at all this material. Mm-hmm. They've got a spot picked out, a piece of land picked out that they're trying to secure. And they've got a pioneer team that's ready to go on there and on the property and start making things happen. And so they're very close, and I will be with them when they get closer.
Mm-hmm.
So that, because it's the same model. So,
right.
So that is where we could do it, and they've got their they've got a lot of it already designed. They've got the people lined up to do this. They've got the food production lined up. They've got the buildings, the infrastructure, details within the buildings and the housing units. And so it's the plan is just all right there. And we're looking for the resource to get started.
Now, some people might look at this and say, well, it sounds to me like you're going to be living a pretty primitive life. I mean, you know, if you're going to create a whole new model that's going to make the old one obsolete, what's the role of technology? What's the role of the mechanized world, shall we say, or the new, shall we say, mechanized world?
Oh, absolutely.
What's that going to look like?
Absolutely. Embrace technology in the mechanized world, because this is going to be something that is going to provide a quality of life that's going to be beyond what most people have available to them right now. But quality of life is more than just about things.
Mm-hmm.
Quality of life is about having more time. And the time involved that the people now have to jump in their cars and commute and work 40-hour weeks. It's not necessary to work 40 hours a week in a system that's based on cooperation, because as I said, like 85% of those jobs that exist and all the time that those kinds of things take and all the time that it takes for people to try and survive on their own by making nonsense products and providing services that people don't need. In a community like we're talking about, with the healthcare being free, the preventative, you know, there's going to be time for things like preventative medicine. There's going to be time for daily exercise, because it's going to be largely a pedestrian community with the cars that people collectively share parked on the outskirts. And so the quality of life that people are going to have is far greater, and it's absolutely going to embrace technology as part of that. As a matter of fact, that's one of the challenges that they're having in the world and as people project going forward, because robotics is taking over so much that the amount of manpower that is going to be necessary to do some things, it's going to you know, that amount of manpower is going to diminish. And then what are those people going to do? The politicians keep saying, we need to create more jobs, more jobs. Well, sure, in every person for themselves system, that's true. But in a system based on the highest good for all, no, we need fewer jobs. We need less time working. We need more time to restore the environment. We need more time to get in touch with our own inner world and get in touch with and connect with other people and with nature.
In the last few years since you and I chatted, I've been in touch with a number of different people who are kind of along the same lines, just looking for ways to de-stress our society, because quite honestly, the way that we're living now is killing us. You know, I'm not sharing anything out of school because it's mine to share. I'm dealing with hypertension now. You know, I'm only 55 and I'm dealing with high blood pressure. You know, and yet it's not in my diet where the problem is per se. It's in my mindset. I need to find those outlets that will allow me to decompress, to lower that blood pressure, so that I'm not at risk for all of the wonderful little maladies and ailments that accompany that. Other than that, I'm perfectly healthy. I'm able to work. I'm able to do the things I enjoy doing, to build a fire in the fireplace when we want to on a cold night, or play with the animals in the yard, on the warmer days and so forth. Go here and there, even get on the bicycle or walk up and down the streets here in Santa Barbara in particular. And it just seems to me like, yeah, we really, as we say often, we're looking for those new ways of living. Otherwise, we as a species, we're going to cease to exist.
Richard, I think in about 2 months, and living in a community such as we're describing, in about 2 months, it'd totally take care of the hypertension and the high blood pressure.
Okay. Well, as I said to Jacques Fresco about his concepts, and I know you're familiar with his ideas, I asked him when this new civilization was going to be around, and could it come around today? And he says, no, it probably won't happen in his lifetime. And he was 94 when I talked with him back then. And it wouldn't happen in mine, he says. And I was really upset about that because I wanted it now. And of course, I know people, they want what you're talking about now. Have you come up with ways in which people can begin to incorporate some of these ideas into their lives now, even though they can't move into a 500-unit or 500-person community just yet? Are there things that we can do today to begin that transition, even if we can't do it physically, again, to the location, on the other levels, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, to make that shift, if you will?
Yeah, I've been asked that question before, and what comes up within me continually when I hear that question is to really move to a place of loving inside each of us, loving for ourselves, loving for other people. I had an experience, which I'm not going to tell the story today, but it's a fascinating story, when I was facing a physical medical challenge, and I was looking for how did I create this for myself? And when I got the answer for that, and I was shown in no uncertain terms what that answer was, it was, no matter what anybody else does, the only responsible action is to return loving. To just be in a place of loving inside. It may be getting out of the way and avoiding certain things, mm-hmm. And certain people, but always to get to that place of loving inside. And that's, if people could do that and see that we're more alike than we are different, to recognize, as my friend who's had 4 near-death experiences and was told by the guides on the other side, that there's one superseding law for all the universe, and that is that everything is one thing. So if we can move into that consciousness where we can see, no matter what other people do or what it looks on the outside, what it looks like, you know, to be in just a loving connection with myself, with others, with nature, and to reside in that place and not to do things out of againstness, but just to do things because we know that it's based on the highest good for all concerned.
Mm. Well, I think that's extremely good advice. And I know that people are trying to find any and all modalities, if you will, to come to that center point, if you will. I know that one in particular, and I'm fortunate in terms of where I live, to follow this advice to a certain degree, is getting reconnected with nature. I mean, that apparently seems to be huge. And then I often use nature as my blueprint, so to speak, when talking about these things. There is no other species on the planet that does the things that the human animal does, assuming that those two terms aren't oxymorons per se or what have you. Granted, I think it's a wonderful achievement that man is able to fly, but with a lot of things, I often wonder, just because we can, does that mean we should do certain things? Sometimes we just jump ahead and we don't think about the potential ramifications. We're more interested in, the challenge. You know, why did you climb that mountain? Because it was there. Why did you build that airplane and try to fly it? Well, because it was there, so to speak. You know, I think in terms of the spread of disease, air travel is probably the greatest contributor. Like during the Ebola outbreak, when we first started hearing the news, and of course it was coming to America and everything, I kept thinking, what if you shut down the airlines for 21 days? I realized the economic upheaval it would create, but isn't there a greater good involved than economic benefit? What about the survival of the species? I mean, if this thing were to spread and get out literally unchecked, how many of us are going to be? It's kind of like the polio, or not polio. I can't think of the disease now. Typhoid Mary and those types of things. The one that was transmitted by rats in Europe. Okay, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, though. They're always coming up with something.
Yeah, there's always nature has an interesting way of sort of balancing things out. Maybe air travel was intended for that purpose, to help balance things out, because we refuse to stay home when we get the flu, you know, the latest strain of flu, you know, and I tell people, if you're not feeling well, if you're sick, stay home. I don't want it. And I don't want to share it with anybody else. I'm seeing more people who are carrying around with them surgical masks, you know, so that either they don't get, nor do they spread maybe what some contagion they might have. And that's a wonderful, kind thing to do. But it's very interesting. In terms of, and you kind of brought this up, in terms of that one resource, what is that one resource that you were referring to earlier that is needed? Is it the dollars to acquire the land?
Well, first of all, when I was thinking about what can people do, there's one more thing that I would recommend that people do. One is to go to the Community Planet website. That's www.communityplanet.org, and go there and look at the vision. Watch the video. There's me on a very good day, highly edited, so it takes out all the awkward moments. And see if you can relate to the vision that we're sharing. Also have the book, The Next Evolution, that describes it in detail. And also go to onecommunityglobal.org and look at their website, because it'll let you know what's possible, what the vision is, and going to one community will let you know how far along we are. So that's another thing that one can do besides accessing and living in the loving.
In terms of, how long have you been involved in this? How long have you, obviously you said since 1961 reading this book, but in terms of the actual, shall we say, moment, if you will, or period in time that you actively began to pursue this and trying to create this and gathering people of like mind to join you on this wonderful journey?
Well, this was always in my consciousness, and I always carried it as an idealized vision in my head, and I was always attempting to acquire the resources that could make this thing happen. And at some point, I realized that when I was talking about this, that very few people that I would talk to had a notion of what this was. So I thought, okay, we need to get this down in writing to describe this so that people could have a concrete description of this. So there was a group of six of us that got together, and I thought we could do it in about 10 weeks and describe things like economics and administration and food production and building and do it in sections like that. But the class rebelled, and they said, no, those are the boring questions. We want to ask new questions that are encompass the interconnectedness of all things. And so economics became, how do we share our abundance? Mm-hmm. And decision-making, the administration became, how do we reach consensus, and so on. And health became, how do we vitalize ourselves? And food production became, and preparation became, how do we nourish ourselves, which are broader types of questions than the traditional in-the-box kind of descriptions that people have. So it actually took us about 3 years to put together this vision. And when the synergy of all of us put this together, it was far better than the kind of abstract vision that I had in my head. So that is the core of the book, actually, is that description that the six of us put together over those 3 years. And there was magic that was involved in the process. So it was rather amazing.
When we come back from our break, I want to talk more about consensus.
Okay.
And how that concept came up and how it's if you will, developed over the course of time, or how you've managed to see it basically stabilize in terms of, hey, it works. Why reinvent the wheel, as they say? If it's working, keep using it and so forth. We're going to continue talking here with Jack Reed, the author of The Next Evolution. He's also the founder, the visionary of CommunityPlanet.org. That's the website, CommunityPlanet.org. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and thanks for staying with us here on the program as we continue talking with Jack Reed, the author of The Next Evolution. And this has to do with, I think it's really, really cool. It's a blueprint for transforming the planet. And I remember, Jack, when, and we're going to talk about consensus in this next segment, but I remember when in the 70s and 80s in particular, when I would hear people talking about how they want world peace, I kept hearing from the more spiritual and or metaphysical corners that world peace will never happen as long as we are seeking for a particular vision of peace outside of ourselves. And as the song goes, let there be peace on earth and let it begin with me. And if I don't have peace within myself, I can forget about it for the rest of the world, because I am not finding that peaceful space and finding the different ways of being the observer and not being the judge, jury, and executioner of those people and situations and so forth and so on. One of my guests even made an interesting observation that everybody, regardless of what their role is in life, and this is literally everybody, is just playing out their roles. There is no judgment as to what their role is. That's just what they're doing. And that's a hard one for a lot of people to take in, I think. And that's why this person didn't spend a lot of time on it, because when you start looking at what we will call the bad people, okay, who hurt other people in whatever form that may take, this person still asserts they're only playing out the role they came here to play out. Do they have to? That's always a choice. We're not predestined, but it's always a choice. But whatever choice we make, that's the role that we're playing. You're playing your role. I'm playing mine. It's neither of them are higher or lower than the other, or better or worse than the other. It's just a role. It's like when you watch a play on a stage and you see all those people, you know? What do you think about that?
Well, I think that there's something to be said for that. And I think people's roles can change at the same time. So,
and at the same time, we have to have some kind of civil discourse, civil behavior within our social structure in order to be able to take our species to whatever the next level is for us. And you have found that in the construct of consensus. Tell us about how that came about and what it is.
Well, when we were doing the description of the book, when the six of us were working together, and we thought, well, how do we do consensus? How do we do decision making within the community? And so we were just brainstorming the different models, and one of the people brought up how the Mohicans used to do decision-making in the Northeast, and that was based in consensus. And so this was actually the most challenging section of our description to put together, is how do we work consensus in a community of 500 people? And it's way too detailed to go into and on the show, because one has to look at diagrams and other kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But at the core of this, it's really accessing that consciousness of the highest good within each one of us. And after we got the description of the book written, I was living in a spiritual community in Los Angeles at the time, and one of the people for the administrator for Peace Theological Seminary was doing a two-year master's program at the University of Santa Monica, and she needed something to do for her second year. So she wanted to put together a training on consensus decision making. So she and I, with the help of another person, a local person here in Santa Barbara, Dr. Connie Stomper, we created a class, a 10-week class on consensus decision making. And interestingly, 10 of the 12 people in the class were composed of five couples. And after the training was over, they said, this is the best couples training we've ever taken. And we thought, I wonder what that is. And it's because we really dealt with the consciousness that it takes to do consensus decision making. There are many trainers out there who are doing consensus trainings, and there are many books written on it and organizations that were promoting it. And the one thing that I didn't see in any of them is what we came up with as the core of everything, and that is that people need to access that consciousness of consensus, or that consciousness of the highest good within them, before they can really effectively work with implementing consensus in their lives. And so our trainings are based on, I mean, sure, we do deal with techniques and how to do this or that, but primarily it's about accessing that consciousness. Because when people can come into that consciousness, when people can take responsibility, absolute responsibility for the entire group, not just themselves, because I've done a lot of team building in my facilitation career, and it's when people embrace the entire group rather than holding back that they're the most effective. I could tell stories about that, but in most decision making right now, like what's done here in the city locally in Santa Barbara, and with the Brown amendment, where people can't the council members can't actually talk to each other outside of.
Yeah, I remember that. Yes, I thought that was really odd.
Yeah, it's well, I can understand the reason why they do that, but still. You know, it's the loudest, if being involved in any group decision making, it's always the loudest people and the strongest people who are able to somehow impose their decision making on the group. And the people who may have the best information are the people who are being absolutely quiet. And in our group of six, what taught us this is we had a person in the group who was a woman who was very based in her intuition. And so when we would reach by consensus, we'd check for consensus and say, like, okay, is everybody in consensus with this part of our description? And a couple of times she would say, no, that's not it. And we would say, what's not it? What's how do you see what's off with this? And she said, the only thing I can tell you is this is not it. And so we would be frustrated because we wanted to move along, and then we'd come back the next week and we'd check in again. We'd say, okay, hoping that she'd changed her mind. No, that still wasn't it. Eventually, we would just have to be, because we were friends, and we became better friends, we would just start being crazy and throwing out all kinds of wild ideas. And that actually is part of the essence of brainstorming, is to just throw out everything. And in the wild ideas that we were throwing out, somebody'd say something, and then somebody'd build on that, and then it'd be built on that. And then we'd come up with something that was a whole level above where we had been thinking about how to describe something. And invariably, when we got to broke through the ceiling into this new level, she would say, "That's it." So how often would that be valued in traditional decision-making structures? It's just not there where those kinds of voices are valued. And that mm-hmm. can be the magic of doing consensus with people who hold that consciousness, because we can make decisions that are so much better. There's a quote in my book about Gandhi, that Gandhi made, where he said, "I don't believe in the majority rule system, where the will of 51% of the people can be imposed on the other 49%. And that is essentially the decision-making that this country and most of the countries of the world have embraced. And it's just, we can do so much better than that. But it's about accessing that consciousness within each yeah. one of us, where we recognize that we are one with the group, where we recognize that we can tune into what's for the highest good of all, and that highest good for all will be the thing that serves us all. But at the same time, we can use creativity and decision and accessing intuition to get to even higher level decisions.
Yeah, it's no wonder that there are so many people in this country and around the world who feel disenfranchised.
Yes.
It's no wonder.
And that's why in elections, why people traditionally, instead of saying what they're for, people will, it's so easy to just hit against
yeah.
people. And so yeah. when the majority gets to have their will, and the next decision, maybe a different majority, and the next decision, a different majority, and pretty soon everybody's feeling like they're disenfranchised, and nobody gets their absolute choice in things, and so everybody's feeling like they're not represented, and that's why people just vote against things in elections rather than for.
You know, in my again brief period here on the planet and observing the processes that are going on, make myself sound like an alien. may not be too far off. I always thought it was very strange understanding the dynamics of the energies that are put out during these campaigns. I thought, this is very strange, and especially hearing about this from the religious community, talking about how powerful words are, you know, especially from the Christian community, which I worked for 15 years in radio, and they would talk about the power of words, you know, and you want to be careful about the things that you say because those words have power. So I would throw that, overlay that over an election, a primary in general. And in the primary, you've got who knows how many people involved, and everybody's attacking everybody else. And you have the election, and then a select few are culled out, and there are only a few left. And now they say, if they're of the same party, okay, now let's all join together to beat those guys. And then the same process goes on, and they say things about the other guys, and they attack. General election happens. And then one guy wins. And then he says, okay, let's all join ranks, join together to do what's best for the common good. And I thought, yeah, but you've already generated so much negative energy amongst all of the people. How are you expecting to get them to go along? Because, you know, you have all of this real charged situation. It just didn't make sense to me. And it's like, we'll put all the those words were just politics. And I said, no, they're not. If you didn't mean them, then you shouldn't have said them. You obviously meant them because your goal was to sit in that office, which you now sit in. And the words have been said. And words have power. So what you're talking about, I think, is very constructive. I know that For example, I'm sure you're familiar with Greg Braden. He talks an awful lot about the difference between competition and cooperation. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you're talking about that. One of the concepts that I've been dealing with over the last couple of years has to do with this aspect of seeking that higher consciousness, that still small voice, if you will, and using the analogy of Gene Roddenberry's character in the Next Generation series of Star Trek, the Borg, how they are all connected. They're individuals who carry out individual tasks that are totally separate from one another. But they're all tapped into the same voice telling them what to do for the big picture, which they can't see. And this goes way beyond the whole aspect of assimilating civilization. That's not what that's about. To me, it was the best metaphor I'd ever seen for the interconnectedness that we all share. And then this concept of consensus that you're talking about, that is the example of that concept that he created. But because it was made a villain, people won't look at that.
You know, it's interesting that people sometimes think of, well, how can you do consensus within a community that one person can block anything from happening? And there are many communities that have tried to do consensus, and I've talked with some of these people, and they say it just doesn't work. And I ask them two questions. I say, one, was everybody trained to do consensus? And two, were people screened for the ability to do that and the consciousness to do that before they were could participate in the process, because those things are essential. And Diana Leaf Christian, who visits all the eco communities and intentional communities in the United States, when we had her out here for a workshop a few years ago, she said the same thing. She said, don't even try consensus unless people have been trained to do it. But I say, in addition to that, people need to be screened to do that. And we have a way of doing that for participation in One Community and Community Planet, where the people who are going to come there and be a part of the decision-making structure, they have to hold that consciousness of the highest good. And people may say, well, that really takes away people's freedom. And I say, no, it adds to people's freedom, because right now people are being told what to do by all the laws, by the elected officials, by everybody else, whereas in the community, based on consensus, each person in that community has the ability to have everything that happens happen based on the highest good for all, including themselves. And if there's something that's missing, the essence of consensus is creativity. Let's bring in something into the decision so that this decision really works for everybody. We need more expansive decisions.
So the next question that comes to my mind then is, isn't it important then to know what is the goal of consensus, regardless of the issue that you're dealing with? Whether it's to build your farm field over to the left, or put up your living quarters to the right, or whatever the issue is, what is the goal of consensus in the concept that you just described?
It would be creating a decision that everybody can support, can choose.
And if everybody is tapped into that higher consciousness within themselves, that you're saying that that's something that they need to be trained to do, because we're all kind of disconnected, aren't we, from that voice?
It's how people need to be trained to do this in decision making. And here's an example of that, is that so oftentimes when people are having, and this could be a married couple or any two people or a small group of people or a larger group of people, when people are having trouble reaching collective consensual decisions, a lot of time it's based not on what they're actually discussing, but on something that's happening inside themselves that they're bringing into their relationship with the other person or other people in the group. And we were doing a consensus class one time, and there were the people in the class were having a great deal of difficulty coming into alignment with each other in terms of what they wanted to do with a particular decision. And we say that at the bottom line, when there's something that's amiss in the process, there's an element of safety that's lacking. So we do what we call the safety check, which is 10 is I'm feeling completely safe, and 1 would be I've got 1 foot out the door right now. And we just say, how many people are 10, 9, 8, and so on. And invariably, when the group is blocked, there are people at lower levels of safety inside themselves. So the group, and then we have everybody go around and just express what's happening within themselves, not what's happening with someone else, but what's happening within me is what I'd be talking about. Or what I might observe in the group process, not singling out anybody else to have a critique of what anybody else is doing. So this group did this, and each of them took probably about 15 minutes exploring what it was. And it was remarkable how many times someone in the group reminded them of an uncle that used to abuse them, or a partner that they used to have where they had a bad experience with, and they were completely unconscious of this before they really started the inner exploration of why they were having challenges right then in the group. And at the end of everybody in the group taking their turn to doing this, they came into a consensual decision within 5 minutes because it wasn't about what they were discussing. It was about what was happening that were blocks within each person. And that's what we call accessing that consciousness of the highest good for all. It's accessing that loving inside. It's clearing the blocks that may exist there, because when that happens, magic happens.
So you're talking about a process of setting aside the personality and or the ego in order to access that higher consciousness. And not just setting it aside, but understanding why, as you use the example, why I'm having issues with you. And the process of consensus doesn't have to do with, if I'm understanding correctly, making a strong case for your position, because all the ideas would be laid out, and it's literally everybody checking in within to see if that's okay or not. From that higher level, not about whether it's okay with me, Richard. It's about what am I getting? What is my gut telling me? What is that higher, that still small voice telling me? Does that sound workable for all people concerned, or is there something amiss?
Yeah, we've got some very fun processes that we do to this, because we take the first part of our consensus trainings that Dr. Stomper and I facilitate together, and we set the stage for moving into actually doing consensus by talking about the inner qualities that it takes to do this. And some of these are really fun exercises, like the attachment-detachment exercise we do, where when people are stuck, they get to see where is it inside that I'm getting stuck on these things, because they can come up with information that may surprise them. And with the assistance of the group, we do these in triads and sometimes groups of four. And it's really fun, interesting exploration. And it's all about accessing that inner environment and what's going on. I wouldn't necessarily describe it as ego, although it could be that. It's just that we're unconscious of so many things that are going on, and it's moving into being more fully conscious of ourselves, and not only accessing what our blocks are.
So let me ask you, in regards to consensus in this process that you're describing, first of all, you talk about you primarily deal in triads or maybe groups of four. What is the largest group of people you have ever worked with that you have actually been able to come to consensus on, whatever the issue was? And how long did that take?
Well, we, in the spiritual community that I was in Los Angeles, we would have like sometimes 40 people in the house, but not all those people had taken the class and been trained in it. So there was a challenge with that. I wouldn't do that again unless everybody had been through a training. So,
and being trained in a consensus building, if I can put it that way, is important because you have to be coming from, in spite of the fact that you're tapping into that higher consciousness, you still have to be coming from a particular mindset, don't you? I mean, you have to be coming from a particular place of understanding that I am here with these people working to build consensus on this particular issue. The goal is whatever it is, and I have to remain mindful of that in spite of whatever other stuff may be going on inside that, as you've already described, I might have to share openly because the whole purpose is to come to consensus on this particular issue for the highest good of all people concerned.
Yeah, I wouldn't describe it just as a mindset. It's a combination of a mindset and a heart set.
Okay.
Set. It's really the best way I can describe it is that commitment to continually access that consciousness of the highest good for all. And that's a combination of the thinking, and it's a combination of intention and what people hold in their hearts, as opposed to, you know, Barbara Marks Hubbard, a local resident, she described the biggest problem on the planet as being separation. In my book, I described it as alienation and isolation, but I wrote that before I heard Barbara say it's separation, and I completely agree with that. The biggest challenge on the planet is separation, and that's separation from ourselves, within ourselves, from doing the inner journey to make that inner connection. It's the separation from other people, believing that other people are somehow different or apart or separate from us, as opposed to what my friend, again, with the near-death experiences said. If people really get that everything is one thing, that's the one thing they can get to understand the entire universe. And so with those things, you know, and it's also separation from nature, believing that that nature is just there for us to use and sometimes destroy. And so separation is the key issue. And when people can access that consciousness of the highest good for all concerned, they're in that consciousness of oneness. And that's the key to doing consensus decision making.
And one of my observations in that we tap into the still small voice or the higher consciousness, when we choose to do that, and if we could do it 24/7, there is this aspect that we would never have to make another choice again, that the one choice of listening to and following the promptings of the higher consciousness or the still small, whatever you want to call it, eliminates any future choices. What choices do I have to make? I'm following the highest voice and direction I could possibly follow. My ego is set aside and life should just kind of flow along. Now, I'm not saying that we wouldn't have challenges in our lives, but if that's what I'm tapped into, then what do I have to worry about? Because if I'm listening and following through, my belief is that I will never be put in harm's way. I may be challenged because there are things I need to learn as a human being in my own personality. But you know, it's not going to take me to the edge of a cliff and throw me off and tell me to throw myself off the cliff. If my life's purpose is to be of service to all of humanity in whatever capacity the still small voice tells me, what's the problem?
Well, one of the problems could be if people are listening to that voice and it's not really a voice coming from the highest place.
So then there's a distinction we would have to...
We need to be careful about how we do that. And if we come into a situation where somebody else, their voice is telling them something completely opposite, it's time for those people to come together and really explore that and collectively see what's going on there. We have an exercise. We have two exercises that address that. One is called Hidden Agendas, and the other one's called Truth Versus Stuff, where we have a way of people being able to explore what's going on. And one of the ways I would explore that, for instance, if you and I had that, we're following our still small voices, I would have to, not that I would have to, but I would choose to think, okay, well, I'm going to look at this as if Richard's voice is he's really residing in the truth of what's going on, and I am for some reason not. And you would look at it just the opposite, and then we would be able to explore it from that place. It's the idea of putting oneself in another person's shoes, and in that process of being able to explore that from a neutral place, we might find what's really going on there.
I think it's extraordinary. And yes, I wish that that the boardrooms of the world and the governments of the world would use something along this line, because a lot of decisions that have been made wouldn't be made because they weren't for the highest good of all concerned. They weren't sustainable solutions to whatever the challenges were that were facing the people. And again, I think it's real interesting too how, again, that the example you gave of a vote of 51%, the majority wins, 49% of the people are left out in the cold. They basically, you know, they talk about, you know, your vote counts. Not if I'm on the 49% side, my vote doesn't count. At that point, I'm out. And now, from an ego perspective, I made the wrong choice because now I'm on the outs. I'm separated from them because I voted the wrong way. I mean, that's kind of the way that our egos tend to go sometimes.
You know Marshall Rosenberg, right?
The name is vaguely familiar.
He for years, he came to, before he retired, he came to Santa Barbara and he was doing the nonviolent communication workshops and trainings. And he's worked with some very challenging situations in terms of where people are really at odds with one another, and nonviolent communication has a way of addressing that. Now, obviously, it takes one person who is holding that consciousness, and they may be working with another person who's not. But it's a way of doing resolving disputes. And Marshall, I sent him a copy of my book, which he read, and when he emailed me, and he said the more, and he wasn't trying to be funny, and he was not trying to be flattering. He said, the more I read your book, The Next Evolution, the more I read your book, the more I wonder, why isn't this the most widely read book on the planet? Because Marshall really got it, that our description here is, and people doing this, and we haven't had time to really talk about the details of what it would look like and how it would work. But if people would live with each other in this way, it would basically address all the challenges facing our planet. And Marshall absolutely got it. And that's the best one-sentence endorsement I've ever heard from anybody on any book.
Well, I couldn't disagree with you on that. And I would tend to agree with him in terms of just what we've discussed here on the program today, that we have a viable, a very workable, because you're using it in your life today, construct for, you know, resolving issues and challenges and the problems that face us in relationship day to day, whether it's 2 or 200 or 2 million or whatever the number is. And it is possible. It is absolutely possible. I guess the biggest question is, how long are we willing to take? to come to consensus, because it doesn't sound to me like it's going to happen in an afternoon. It takes time. I think that's really what I'm trying to say, is it takes time.
Yeah, well, our training is a 40-hour training, so mm-hmm. it's a lot of the trainings are just one weekend, but when one is dealing with consciousness and accessing and committing to that consciousness inside, it takes that, because it takes looking at how one interacts with themselves and other people in a different way if they haven't been doing it in a way that is really accessing that collective consciousness of the highest good.
And in one sense, if that's what you're doing, then in a manner of speaking, it takes no time at all.
Well, there is that.
Because I've had situations, especially at this radio station, where we've been handed a major project that we've been asked to do that's going to take a lot of time. And I've done this long enough to know, and I tell this to everybody who's getting worried about how much time this is going to take, I say, look, do you realize we are going to be on the other side of this project before you know it? And we were. It's like 3 hours a day for 4 days, or 4 hours a day for 6 days, whatever it is. And the next thing you know, it's over and we're already into 2015. And those projects are way back there. And we were worried about how much time it was going to take. Get into it. Enjoy it. Have fun with it. Because it won't come again. You know, and so with this consensus building, I think it's a fantastic idea if we could only incorporate it more and more. And I think that's where, when we start using it in our day-to-day lives, is there enough in the next evolution for us to get started, even without the trainings, the 40-hour training? Is there enough there that if it resonates with us, we can kind of get the ball rolling, and then if we want to pursue the training, we can get a hold of you through the communityplanet.org website?
Sure. There's certainly a lot of good material in there. It's, you know, it's just scratching the surface.
Sure.
Because we could do a whole other book on consensus. But
yeah,
there's information
extraordinary.
There.
Just extraordinary. Before we wrap up the program, I do want to thank you for joining us on the program. And I didn't ask you these questions back when I had you on, I think it was 2007, maybe 2008.
Wow. So that was before I went to France and did six consensus trainings over there to people who were speaking French, and I wasn't.
Oh, that must have been very interesting.
That was very interesting.
I'm sure a translator was involved.
There was.
Although,
minimal translation.
I was going to say, it would have made it even more interesting had there been no translator.
Yeah, and at times that was the case.
Yeah. Who is Jack Reed?
Jack Reed is just a nice guy who's just like anybody else, very simple, and trying to transform the planet
with
a vision on how to do so.
Mm-hmm. And even though we've discussed it at quite a length here in this past hour, what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
Well, if we can set up, when we set up this initial cluster of communities, let's say that it's 500 people, and then we put six of them together so that there's 3,000 people, and then people see that, because it'll be out in all the media. People will come there. They'll learn how this is done. They'll see the value of people collectively sharing resources, redefining wealth as use and access. And then this concept starts getting replicated all over the planet, so that from one, there's two the next year. And from each one of those spawns two more. Within 25 years, we could transform the entire planet, because when people see what's in it for themselves in terms of having a far superior lifestyle and abundance on all levels, and we're talking all levels, not, you know, monetary is just, that's just again, that's just use and access. So when people see what's in it for them, they see the model that's actually existing. They see and know how to copy that because it's all open source, where people can copy it everywhere, where they get trained in consensus decision making, where they start living in that greater connection of loving with themselves, each other, and the environment. We can transform the planet in a generation, and I think it's the only... First of all, I think it's an incredibly viable way to do it. I think it's the only way to do it because everything else is just putting Band-Aids on a broken system.
And who inspires you?
Anybody who comes from a place of loving in their hearts. And also people who, in addition to that, have the vision about how do we create a planet that can work for everybody. As I said, my partner, Jay Sable, in Hermosa Beach, he and I share the same brain. And it's good to have somebody out there like that who's doing it and everybody on his team that works with him.
Jack, I want to again thank you so much for joining us on the program. And I'm not even sure if this is the right verbiage per se, but obviously much success. It's one of those things that, like I said earlier, I would love to see it happen and be instituted on a wider spectrum now, as opposed to having to wait. But once again, we'll be on the other side of that in no time.
All right.
So thank you again for joining us.
It's a great pleasure of mine to be here.
The website, once again, is communityplanet.org. That's communityplanet.org. The book is The Next Evolution. It is a blueprint for transforming the planet. The author, Jack Reed, and we are encouraging you to go to that website. We will be linked to it, so you also get linked as well. And if it resonates with you, go for it. We'd encourage you to do so. Until next time, love to all.